Hi, I'm Natalie Gochner. You're listening to Both Sides of the Aisle. I represent the political center, and today we are on Capitol Hill, recording Both Sides of the Aisle. I have on the left co-host Shireen Gourbani. Welcome, Shireen.
Hey.
And Senator Dan McKay on the right. We're in your office, Dan, and
hey,
nice
everybody.
Office.
Yeah, thank you. You like the decorations?
I like the U.S. flag and the state flag. And
that's about all there
that's
is.
About
a Utah State football.
Yeah, I have a Utah State football up there. So
but you can always feel the energy when you're up here on Capitol Hill. It's early in the session. But Dan, how would you characterize the first couple of days here? Is it you've been on Capitol Hill many years now. Is it feeling familiar? Is there something different?
Yeah. So this is my ninth session.
Time flies, doesn't it?
Time flies when you're having fun. Can I tell you that I know this will probably segue into a subject, but there is a different feeling at this session than there has been at all the others, right? Walking into this, we have, you know, as we were walking into the session, it was announced like the Friday before that they were really, really close as far as getting signatures, and they thought that there was the value was there. And then we walk into the session, and shortly thereafter, it's announced that they've reached the hurdles for the tax referendum. And so you are walking around the hallways, and in some ways, the room is different. There's a different air in the room, and everybody is concerned or thinking about that and trying to figure out those lessons. So there's that element. But there's also an entire House of Representatives and half the Senate that is up for election. And is sitting there trying to figure out, like, well, how are we going to message this and what are we going to do?
I have an interesting parallel to make, and then we'll get your comment, Shireen. But when I hear you describe that, it reminds me, I mean, in tax reform, you're trying to do something really difficult. And in the end, citizens' referendum overturned it, and you repealed it. It reminds me of the Olympics. Mm. So I'll make this comment. So the Olympics was a really big deal. Hard to do, you know, and we were about ready to go live and 9/11 happens and it changed the feeling of every meeting.
Oh, interesting.
So you're going between September 11th and first week in February when the games start and in December when the torch relay starts in our state and it makes its way to the Capitol. But the fact that we were dealing with a crisis or a very difficult situation changed the feel of the Olympics. So just a parallel. Shireen, color commentary on this.
So I noticed this morning that over 133,000 signatures had been verified. I am sure that makes for a big feeling in the room coming into the space and getting ready to go to work. I also think it's not just the referendum. You know, leading into this, we've seen, I think many in the public have seen, a state legislature that many feel isn't listening on a variety of issues. So I do hope that everyone who is up for re-election, but in particular those who seem the furthest out of touch with what their constituents have voted for, many Republican districts across Salt Lake County, some across the state, where we have to be thinking about what it means to really have that distance pared down. How do we get closer to representation?
Yeah. You know, it's interesting. It reminds me a lot when things like this happen, you can always think of a triple storm, you know, and maybe it's more than triple, Dan, but it's a triple storm for it to be tax reform. That's just really hard to do. It's a triple storm to have had this gap between the people and the legislature because of Medicaid expansion, medical marijuana, and the like, SB 54.
Yeah.
And then there's also a bit of a triple storm in that it was a special session in December.
Yeah.
And all those things kind of pile in.
We tried to do it in August, and then we tried to do it in September.
Yeah, it was all because you were making improvements.
Well, yes, and, you know, with a compromise, and this is the way it is with a compromise, we would put it together, and then it would fall apart. And then we'd put it together, and it would fall apart, and that's happens. It's very inside baseball, but, you know, I have seen the president and the speaker, you know, best of friends and, you know, on alternative speaking grounds, I guess, in that way. Not really enemies, but... But in that way, this was tense and tough to put together and to have spent all that, quote, legislative energy and then to get to the end of that and then there to be like nothing to show for it. That's exhausting. And it feels like, I will say this for my colleagues, I said, why does this feel different? I've asked a few of them, well, what's different? This feels different this year. And a lot of them said, well, for the first time, it doesn't feel like we actually took any time off from the last session.
Yeah.
So they start with fatigue.
You mentioned lessons that people are reflecting on what they've learned.
Yeah.
What have you learned?
That's a great question. So obviously, I think there are process elements that we could improve. I mean, my constituents, you know, the people that I get town hall feedback and those kinds of things, they were concerned about one policy or another. And, you know, some would say, well, this should, they, each of these policies, these tax policies should run in their own bill, right? And they should live or die in their own, you know, in their own perspective. But taxes is too big. Everything with taxes touches everything else. And I've also, I think I learned this like my second session, maybe my first session that I was in the legislature. Representative Butterfield from up in Cache Valley, he ran a bill. He ran a bill in the same session, one about education and one about that was dramatically reforming education. And then he had another bill that was dramatically reforming like law enforcement and how DUI enforcement was going to be done in the state. And I watched him do this and he had people yelling at him in, you know, in the education community, and he had people in the law enforcement and public safety community yelling at him. And then he went on to lose his election that year. And I realized from that lesson, and I carry that forward to today, you really have to be careful about who you make mad, right? Mm-hmm. And so in this situation, we
found a strategy.
we found a way to make everybody mad about something, and that's probably the hard part about reform. The unfortunate thing, and this is, I think this is the tendency, because to this, I don't want the strategy to get in the way of the policy. You never want that to happen. One of the tendencies, though, and you hear this every once in a while, is, well, maybe we shouldn't have tried to make the Democrats happy with policy, and it should have been just do this, which at the end of the day, you know, I think that's the wrong lesson for us to learn.
Because some of the really good things that I saw in this reform package were things that generally are coming out of progressive left-leaning policies.
Yeah.
And there's a lot, I think, that was lost that is really good in this bill. But
how do we listen, though? That's the question is, everybody's yelling at us to listen. And this is, as a public just official, and I know, Shireen, you are in the throes of this now with the issues you're dealing with at the county. Like, how do, unless you do exactly what people tell you to do, the loud people, right? You're not listening. And so how do you ferret out what is the loud noise of, you know, people yelling at you, and sort that with what, you know, what the silent majority might be thinking? I mean, I've now received, since we repealed the bill yesterday, I've now received, I think I'm up to four. It's not a lot, but when you think about how, the issues we deal with, a four can be a lot of emails on an issue. I've received four people, emails from people that said, I did not understand the tax reform policy when I signed the referendum. Will you not vote for the repeal? And I'm like, guys, that ship has sailed. So this is that struggling thing, because I think I pride myself on being available on social media. People can yell at me in the supermarket. They can yell at me, you know, just about anywhere I go. I'm fine being yelled at. I've even had it at church. I'm in. But how do we, I don't know.
Well, for our listeners, so the opportunity lost here is that the hardest thing, in my judgment, that government does, other than public lands, in my opinion, but is reform taxes, because it gets at the heart of what government compels people to do, and that is you're forced to pay taxes.
Yeah.
You know, it infringes on people's rights.
Would you say
essentially
that?
No, I wouldn't go that far, but we're all in a compact together. But it's the hardest thing you do. And by getting so close, the opportunity that we missed is for the first time ever in our state, an earned income tax credit for people that suffer from intergenerational poverty.
Yep.
For the first time ever, we would actually have the sales tax off food, because they got a rebate of more than what they pay, the low income.
If they file.
Yeah, and I want them to file, because I want them to be part of the society, and I think we could figure out how to help make that happen. Mm-hmm. We lost having an income tax cut for seniors. We lost a $160 million tax cut. We lost a motor fuel tax increase that I think would be good for air quality and make users pay more. I mean, these were all masterstroke kind of public policy things, but here's the real problem in my mind. You had the economy on your favor. You know, so we look forward, and you don't know what you're going to get. You're going to get a new governor, inexperienced, hasn't carried these things. You've got the economic cycle that may not work about you. And so what Utah's famous for is our incredible fiscal responsibility. We were looking ahead, and we just didn't get it.
I think this is a really interesting point. I've been thinking about it a lot. So you'd mentioned before when we were having this conversation about feeling like you can only do something this big when the economy is good. But I wonder if this is a reflection of the fact that many people in their day-to-day lives do not feel this economy is good. And there's a lot of anxiety. There's a lot of economic anxiety that stretches across many sectors of our community. So that, I think, is a little out of step. And I'd be curious to dig deeper into that.
Can we do that in the second segment?
Absolutely.
Love to do it.
My permission.
Okay. I'm with Senator Dan McKay and Shireen Gourbani. Natalie Gochner, stay tuned.
You're listening to Both Sides of the Aisle on KCPW. For more episodes of all our in-house podcasts, click on the Local Programs tab at kcpw.org. And while you're there, please consider donating to KCPW to support public radio in your community.
Shireen Gourbani on the left.
Dan McKay on the right.
Natalie Gochner in the political center, and this is Both Sides of the Aisle. We ended the first segment by just talking a little bit about who's being left behind in this economy. Shireen, quickly summarize that point one more time, and then I wanted to comment on it, see what Dan has to say.
Yeah, so I've been thinking a lot about this because the way that people have responded to this, you would think that we were in a different economic environment, right? And when I look at just some of the things that I feel like I'm hearing and seeing the cost of the average home in Salt Lake County go to $400,000, thinking about the way that we're seeing rents rise around the valley, thinking about the increased cost of healthcare for individuals, knowing that we're, I think, second in the nation for kids rolling off of health insurance, seeing some of these other things that are happening in our community, I'm really worried.
Yeah.
And I'm worried when this comment came out and something was happening. I'm trying to remember even where I saw it. Oh, it was Kat Martinez, Murray City Councilwoman, had tweeted out when the report about our lowest unemployment came. Well, how many of you are working two jobs? And it was there was a lot of engagement there. And I think in our community, people feel close to the edge. We know that a lot of people are $400 away from real critical emergency in their personal finances.
So Dan, if you're close to the edge in the strongest economy in the nation at a time with our lowest unemployment rate in our state's history, when the poverty rate has declined from 12% to 9%, and you know, we're going to have a downturn ultimately, it's just a matter of when, what does that say? Like if there's people are close to the edge in this economy?
I worry about this all the time. And honestly, it comes, man, in so many ways, we are doing a bad job of teaching our kids at a young age how to manage their finances. So I do think we could do better there, right?
And
like how to, you know, how to deal with changes in income. But I think there's also like a cost of living change that has really impacted people.
Yeah.
And so they're seeing, you know, the average price of things increase. And so That's part of the dislike for the food tax and some of the other things is they've seen their grocery bills increase without a tax. So there's fear about how to balance it. I get those elements. It is baffling to me, though. I mean, this economy, you know, I have just seen so much upward mobility and we are known for that in the state that it is tough to hear that we still find
leaving
so
people
many.
Behind. Yeah. I heard President Huftalen of Salt Lake Community College this week say that the number one indicator of, you know, economic success, education success is your socioeconomic status as you enter schools.
Yeah.
She was essentially saying that if you are born into a wealthy household, you're going to have economic success. And if you're born into a household with great need, it's more of a flip of a coin.
Which is why I don't think saying just we need to do a better job educating our communities around finances, though 100% agree, right?
Yeah.
Like we should have better opportunities in our school systems along the way to really understand that. There's something else going on, right? Thinking about Salt Lake City school system, over half of the kids in our Salt Lake City school system are eligible for free and reduced lunch. This is happening right in front of our eyes. And there is, I think, a politics that's divorced from these kitchen table issues in a way that I think we need to be having a very big conversation in this state about what it's going to mean to respond to the needs that people are actually feeling.
When President Huftalen shared that, I kind of raised my hand. It was in a group setting. And I said, let me share a stat with you. The ultimate indicator of your quality of life, your economic well-being is how long you live. You know, arguably, right?
Yeah.
So you can look at Department of Health data by neighborhood in Salt Lake County. If you're born in Foothill, that's you have the longest life expectancy.
Yeah.
If you're born in Glendale, the lowest, this is in Salt Lake County, and it's a 10-year difference.
Yes.
Wow.
Four miles away, 10 years difference of life span.
And this is playing out across so many places in our country, right? So if you are economically stable, if you're doing well, your life expectancy is growing. People are living longer than ever. If you are poor, that is not the story.
Yeah.
It's a major problem.
Well, so if I segue this to the Utah governor's race, we've got these candidates, still more to come on the Democratic side. Shireen promises she's going to give us a heads up when it's
when there's going to be some more candidates jump in.
You've got these six declared Republican candidates. Are any of us hearing them talk about this issue, about how we help socioeconomically disadvantaged in our state?
Amy Winder Newton is talking about this. She's been doing work at the county council on intergenerational poverty, really trying to understand it and the complex nature of it. And I would say, as an overall theme, talking about poor and low wealth individuals in this state and in this nation is not the kind. We're not having the robust conversation we should be having.
Yeah.
Well, I would add Greg Hughes has been instrumental in trying to make changes, at least with the symptomatic element, which, you know, then becomes homelessness and some of those things. And so he's been instrumental in that as the speaker.
And I'll just throw in that Lieutenant Governor Cox has been very a leader in intergenerational poverty.
Yeah, that's right.
But what's interesting is it's not reaching to they're all talking about growth. And what else are they talking about? They're talking about mental health, important topics.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
But interesting.
But it's a rising tide floats all boats element versus, you know, to Shireen's point, it's you're sitting around the kitchen table and trying to figure out, how am I going to make this power bill that went up, right? That's an interesting conversation to have. And I think it's always, you know, there's always this fine balance of, you know, where, I don't know, what's the government's role in that whole element? And how do you build a safety net in a way that is meaningful and moves people forward, right?
So I think this is a place where Utah could really lead, because there are so many opportunities to be creative about the ways in which people start to increase their economic mobility without falling off the cliff of assistance. And so many families get scared because they're living in that space where they can get access if they can, not everyone can, but they have access to support systems in place, right? Mm-hmm. And I've heard, you know, conservative people, Republicans tell me that we're just reinforcing poverty. Well, then let's change that. And we have the power to do that here. And I actually think we have the minds who would be willing to do that, but we haven't really had leadership on that issue.
Well, and this is the year. Because you have an open gubernatorial seat and there's a marketplace of ideas out there. And
if there is this undercurrent, right? I get stuck on this because I feel like the arrows are aimed at us on the issue a little bit. And I say us. I just
That's
mean
my job when I come here.
Right? Yeah. Conservative Republicans.
Yeah, conservative Republican element, right? And our listeners don't know this, but I mean, I grew up, you know, extremely underprivileged. I mean, if there was an underprivileged, I was under them, right? So, you know, my dad left when I was 3, and, you know, my mom literally worked at a factory and we slept in the car.
Yeah.
Right. So at the end of the day, it is tough for me in that situation. I wrap my mind around and I keep trying to figure out what changed? Like, how did I get from where we were to where we are? And honestly, this may be an ideological thing, I don't know, but it was me. Like, I changed my mind about who I was going to be. And the interesting thing is the stuff that you hear that's, you know, you're enabling or doing that stuff, you know, I don't know necessarily about the enabling element, but what I'm constantly trying to balance is, how do we keep people from thinking that government is the answer and that they internally are the answer? Because once they change their minds about themselves, granted, it's not going to be easy, but there are programs, there are ways, there are educational opportunities available to them that can help them move out of that. But it has to be an internal change. I'm tired of telling poor people you're always going to be poor because the government's not doing anything. Like, I don't get that.
Right. But I think we also have to acknowledge that not all of those pathways are open for all people. Right. That's when we think about the kinds of communities, even think about the difference in opportunities that you have if you live in Salt Lake City or in Salt Lake County, and if you are, you know, raising your child in Boulder, Utah,
all
right?
Six of them, yeah.
Thinking about the differences that
different
you're experiencing,
yeah,
especially in that rural-urban divide.
Let me do some rapid fire with you guys, and you can decide whether you want to tie it into this socioeconomic discussion.
Yeah, because this has been deep.
The rapid fire would be: Did in the governor's race, sticking with it, did Thomas Wright get a bump from the Bishop LG announcement?
My guess is yes,
okay.
But it won't be as much as Thomas hoped.
And Shireen, do you see anything on that?
I don't.
Okay, because what the polls are showing is that Huntsman has
moved up.
Mm-hmm. Cox holding strong, but is not in the front runner spot anymore.
Okay.
I don't know. Help
well,
me
the,
more.
Well, it's consistent with the poll that was last week, right? So
yeah.
Last week we had a poll that kind of showed the same thing, but Spencer was within the margin of error. It did show that, I mean, that poll was before the announcement of Thomas Wright and Rob Bishop. And so, you know, I think that as people get to know Thomas and they see Rob and Thomas together, which is a Matchbox 20 singer, but that's a whole different issue. But when you see, Thomas
Wright movement.
And Bishop, I think you'll see some
movement.
Here's
the next rapid fire. How much does it disadvantage Lieutenant Governor Cox that he can't fundraise while the legislature's in session?
I think it's an issue. I can understand that would be difficult, knowing what the cycle, having to have been a person who's out there fundraising myself now. You get that. I just imagine a pause for 45 days feels daunting.
Yeah. Especially while your competition, I'll get to do it.
Yep. Yeah. To Natalie's credit, and I hadn't thought about it until then, but Natalie's point was, I don't know how you run from the LG spot and feel like you're your own person when you constantly have to be defending the governor's policies or at least be.
And then you have this problem.
And then you have this problem. And then
it adds up.
Yeah, it just. So I've since Natalie pointed that out to me, I've seen places where it would be nice for Spencer to break out and be his own
people
thing.
People always think that being lieutenant governor gives you a platform, but I'm like, if you're a candidate for governor, you have a platform. You're going to be okay.
Yeah.
Okay, another rapid fire. Dan, 1,000 potential bills filed on Capitol Hill for the 2020 session.
Okay.
You guys are going to be busy.
I don't care. The number, everybody likes to make this issue of this number, right?
Yeah.
A county council or a city council, they can make changes without there being a bill. So.
Yeah.
The number, who cares?
Shireen, are there any that you're watching closely in Capitol Hill?
Yeah, I'm always interested in issues related to healthcare. So getting my list from the Democratic Healthcare Caucus and going through some of the bills is something that I'm passionate about and definitely paying attention to. What I'm excited about is the conversation around what we can do to cap potentially insulin costs.
Yeah. To both of you, Angela Romero has a bill, House Bill 90, which requires clergy who receive disclosure of abuse to report it to law enforcement. I think this one's going to generate a lot of airtime.
It already is, and she's been the target of a vicious and very direct campaign to harass, terrorize her for doing this work. And it is unfortunate. And I also think it really raises a question around why I think this is actually a really important bill.
Yeah, Dan, we're down to 3 minutes, but
yeah,
I'd love you to...
the harassment element... The one thing I love about Angela Romero is she's going to steal
she
sign.
She can handle it.
I mean,
still
granted,
wrong,
I'm
Dan,
not sure.
But,
yeah, no question.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, I mean, it's like, people come after me for one thing or another, and it's like, okay, bring it. Some of my colleagues get nervous, but I'm not worried about Angela.
But she's really putting herself out there for something that's really important to people who are victimized by sexual violence. I know. She's incredible.
She's awesome that way.
Yeah.
I agree.
Yeah. We need to go to gripes, but I just want constitutional earmark for education. Is it going to get a lot of play, Dan? So this is the income tax for education earmark.
It's part of the conversation. What we will do in the long term, there is all kinds of speculation. I understand where everybody's at. Everybody's running off into camps in different directions, but that's what makes this issue hard. It's part of the tax reform element.
Yeah.
Will we deal with it? I don't know.
Yeah. Let's jump to gripes. And Dan, we're going to stay with you if you've got a gripe ready to go.
Okay.
We'll go to Shireen.
As I look back at, my pre-legislative life and I look at where it is now, my mind is completely consumed with politics almost all the time. And my gripe is myself. So at the end of the day...
political animal.
Maybe that's it, right? But I was telling my wife the other night, I'm like, man, I just really, because the session didn't feel like we took a break or that kind of thing. Like, I'm exhausted already. We're in the first week. And my wife is like, what are you talking about? You love this stuff. And I'm like, okay, she's
the
right.
Secret's out.
Yep.
Shireen, a gripe.
So my gripe is going to be the Supreme Court's decision to support the so-called wealth test for immigrants. I think that this is callous, horrendous. When I think about, our message of give us your tired, your poor, your huddled masses yearning to be free, I think this is a very dangerous and just deeply, it feels deeply un-American to me.
Yeah. I'm going to go with a gripe just because we're on Capitol Hill. And as I was walking up to the Senate office building, I saw all these buses idling out there. And it just, and I had to breathe in some of it. And maybe there's some case why it's better for them to idle than to do another cold start or something. I don't know. But it just seems like we're to a point where we could have clean fuels fueling these buses. Mm. And I'd love to see that. So just a quick bright. I guess the other close one for me was the missed opportunity with tax reform.
Yeah.
I just think that's something we're going to still have to live with.
Hey, I hope the storms keep coming because
it's been a great year for that.
Great year for air quality.
So happy for the Sundance visitors because it's been really beautiful and our state has shown well.
It's nice to breathe.
Yeah. We are what we breathe.
I'm going to write that down.
You got it. Natalie Gochner, I'm joined by Dan McKay and Shireen Gorbani. The program's produced by Anthony Scoma. Thanks for listening.